Imagine a group of kids that are making fun of one child. They're all just ridiculing the one child, making fun of the one child. Your child's in that group. He's participating. He comes home. He's in fifth grade. And he says, Mom, I don't even know why we did it. I felt bad for him, but everybody was doing it. It's peer pressure. Peer pressure causes our children to do things they wouldn't automatically do, but peer pressure causes adults to make purchases they wouldn't automatically make. We have to prepare our children to deal with peer pressure.
You're listening to Parenting Today with Dr. Bob Barnes from Sheridan House Family Ministries. I'm your host, Ruthie J. And peer pressure doesn't just happen in school either. There are the neighborhood kids at church, yes, where imperfect sinners also go, like we referenced yesterday. And then as adults, we're dealing with peer pressure all the time. Our families, our friends who go off and have different kinds of jobs and different economic statuses, and then even our church friends and all that goes on there. There's all kinds of peer pressure, some for good, some for bad, but that's what we're talking about today.
We are talking about it today. Peer pressure even happens in momentary relationships. We have a momentary relationship on I-95 every day. And on that, we're this little group, we're the I-95 people, and you determine that you're going to drive on I-95, they're going to keep you calm, you're going to listen to wonderful music on the radio, and you're just going to stay calm, and then all of a sudden there's somebody aggressive, there's somebody honking the horn, there's somebody doing whatever, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're like everybody else. You've even said to yourself, you know, you can't make it on I-95 if you don't drive like the rest of these people, even though you swore you wouldn't be like that. You can, but you succumbed to the peer pressure. I've heard people say in their business world, I hear what you're saying, Bob, but in the business world, you've got to do business like this. I said, what do you mean, do business like sin? Like that. No, you don't. And I think if you do, you're in the wrong business. But I don't believe we have to do that. And so all of us respond to peer pressure, but many of us have not been taught how to respond properly. And so all of a sudden, there we are. We've conformed to the pattern of this world. We've done a Romans 12, too. And the verse before in Romans 12, 1, it says, you know, present yourself as a living holy sacrifice. Here's the why. Here's the why. And that passage ends, is this too much to ask after all that God's done to you? And the beauty is, it ends saying in the ESV, it says, this is your spiritual act of worship. Worship's not what you do in church. Worship is how you live out there in life. Worship in church is very interesting. It's all orchestrated by the pastor and the music guy, the praise and worship leader. Mm-hmm. But worship for me is when I'm out there living this life for God, teaching my children. I can't expect my children not to cave in to peer pressure. They're children. But I need to know it. I need to define it. And I need to go after it. Mm-hmm. And I need to know where it comes from. And there are various forces that influence. There are factors that influence the behavior of my children and the thinking of my children. And we need to be aware of that.
So what are these forces then that are bombarding our kids, well, and even us adults?
I think probably the initial force is self, and there's different kinds of selves. You know, there are the pleaser selves that want to please everybody around them, and they've got to decide what their audience is. Mm-hmm. Watching my pleaser child grow up and decide, is he playing for the audience of his friends, playing for mom? When Roby was growing up, mom had an enormous impact on him. Very interesting. She was his hero because she was such a prayer warrior, and he got it. Mm-hmm. And so watching them grow up, who am I playing this for? And then watching Roby grew up, and he became president of the junior class, yeah, not the student body. And when he became president of the senior class, everybody didn't like him all the time. And it was very, very challenging not to be liked. And that was a great, you know, dad making these decisions is just, wow. And so self, I have to decide right or wrong. Initially, self plays a huge part. I think the next part where we abdicate if we're not careful is family. Family is supposed to be one of the positive pressurers in the right direction. But if you follow a child and the groupies, as you say, of the child, the groupies of the child initially are mom and dad. Prior to middle school, if a child's doing anything in elementary school, he could be holding up a sign for the school play. He's not doing anything. The whole neighborhood shows up with cameras to take a picture of him being a stick in the school play. He's not doing it. He doesn't even have a part. But then all of a sudden, and we've taught the child, I'm here for you. I'm here at all your soccer games. You know, when Roby was 4, he was playing soccer. He wasn't really playing soccer. He was picking clovers. And when the ball would go by him, he wouldn't even notice it was going by him. He's out there in the field. Hilarious. But we're there and we're cheering and on and on and on. But then all of a sudden, we kind of assume they don't need us that much anymore. And we start to back away. And it's very sad as we start to back away.
I think we feel like they don't want us there, but you know, you have teenagers in the house and they don't want to talk to you.
So when do we start taking direction from our children?
Right. But it just feels, you kind of do things so naturally that after a while your teenager starts to reject you and you're like, okay. And then we feel bad.
Do I have to go? I don't want to go. Yeah. Do I have to go with you to that? And we think that they either don't need time with us or we don't get that maybe they don't know they need time with us, but you do need time with us. And really, we all of a sudden, there's a point in time where we allow children to have and teens to have far too much leadership in what's going on here. Come on out of your room. We're going to play. And games were huge for us. And rarely at the beginning of games until they got into high school were they jacked over the games. And I had to get jacked over the games. I'm going to Lowe's. Come with me. I don't want to go. I have to go. Yes, I need your help. Dad, you don't need my help. Okay, I just need you with me. I'm very insecure walking through Lowe's by myself. And they're laughing and we're in the car and I have to make it fun. But family abdicates. And all of a sudden they've gotten used to from almost birth when we were cheering when they ate Cheerios off the tray on through elementary school where they got used to us being in the grandstand of their life, and we empty the seat. We had season tickets, and we empty the seat to the audience, and we're not there in that section anymore. They're going to put somebody in that seat. Your daughter's going to put a little boy in that seat.
They're it's almost like whoever is approving of them gets to sit in that seat.
Yeah, and it is approving, but it's also affirming, and those are two different things. Okay. I can affirm without approving of everything, but I still have to affirm your worth and your value. And the goal in all of this, and it's a 20-plus year goal, is that the number one influencer in their life needs to be God.
Yeah.
Number one influencer. I got to speak for the faculty opening of some schools this week, yesterday morning and this morning. And one of them was a Christian school, and they made the statement of ministry. And we're talking about ministry and the why you're doing it. And one of the ladies said, when I asked, so tell me yesterday's wrap up, why are we here? And she said, I'm here serving God. How do you do that? And the other lady said, by praying and reading my Bible. Yeah, but how do you do that? How do you do that? And you could see a table of 25 to 30-year-olds who are new school teachers just looking and thinking, wow, thank you for somebody to ask that.
Yeah.
Reading my Bible, I get. Studying and praying to God, I get. But now how do I do this thing? And it's learning to play for an audience of one where you apply what you learn and you look every day. What would God say about what you did there? And usually the biggest triumphs are when we do hard things, not easy things. Mm-hmm. When we love the difficult child or my child's situation where you go counter to the culture because you know God wanted you to do that. When you spoke up. When you spoke up, how awesome is that? Teaching them, the whole goal is helping them define who they are by whose they are. Initially family, on to God.
And part of that is then just verbalizing that to the child. You know what? I am almost positive God is cheering on right now because you did that or such as that. You know what? God has a smile on his face. Look what you just did. That's awesome. Not only am I happy, I know God's happy and we're here to please God. Is that the kind of stuff you verbalize?
Oh, yeah. I can almost hear him. I can almost hear him laughing. I can almost hear him say, whoa, angels, did you see that right there? He went and sat with that new boy when the cool crowd wouldn't go sit with the new boy. Did you see that?
Because then you're instilling in them sort of a consciousness of, okay, God is looking on.
Yep.
And not only am I here to please mom and dad, which you do growing up, but you're saying, here's mom and dad here. But you know what? We're all trying to please God too. So God is bigger than all of us. And when you grow out of this mom and dad pleasing stage, God's still there.
That's exactly right. You're spending a lifetime lifting their chin. You're putting their hand up. I know you're looking up to me. Let's look up a little higher. Let's lift your chin. That's the audience you're playing for. And catch that vision. Because if you continue, well, no one else is doing that. No one else is speaking up. I mean, that was a very subliminal message in the parable of the Good Samaritan. The very subliminal message was everybody walk by. But the Samaritan was playing for an audience of one. And when Jesus said, now, which one of those people in that caravan that walked by, that whole peer group that walked by, which one of them do you believe was playing for an audience of one? And he said, which one of them do you think showed mercy? And the expert in religious law in Luke chapter 10 said, well, it's obvious the Samaritan of all people who stopped by. I want to help my people with that because after self, family, God is peers. The little group I hang with is a group that has a huge impact over that child. And so this child is, who do I play for? And as my parents are moving out and abdicating, and I never see my grandparents anymore, you see, here's the difference. There was a time in life where you grew up in a society called Mayberry, and in that society, you had so many aunts and uncles, you weren't really sure who was blood and who wasn't. And it was a community Thanksgiving. And in the community Thanksgiving, wow, the people that were there, it was everybody. And you went to church, and you were everybody, and that community helped raise the child. I grew up in that. I'm not old enough to have been back where I'm talking about with the buckboards, but I grew up in an Italian community, and they raised me. Mm-hmm. And those moms were very Latinesque in their approach. And I can't even tell you all the moms that spanked me growing up when I was a little kid.
You had a couple ears
pulled. Oh, yeah. I mean, and they got it and took me home. My mom did it. You know, it was a wonderful community because they saw you and they were all in. And you learned to play for the Mrs. Sicati who would scream and say, well, I saw what you did. That was great. So peers. But that leads us to the next one that's impacting, and that's culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's a culture out there impacting your child. And that culture is watching weird things on television and watching the way they're dressing and watching the way they're obnoxious and watching the way the adults are stupid on television, but the kids are cool. And all of a sudden you watch it and watch it and watch it and watch it and watch it. And without realizing it, you are conforming to that because you want to be just like 901, whoever they are, and living like them and doing their thing, and you miss it. You miss it. So this people that surround us, if we abdicate, if we don't help our children pay a price for peer pressure, and peer pressure will get you to conform basically in one of two ways. You either conform morally or you conform financially.
Hmm.
Peer pressure will get you to conform morally at the party or on the date or in many other places, or financially with, I don't even know why I bought that. Why did I buy that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did I buy that iPhone the day it came out for $10,000 instead of waiting 3 months for it to go down to $49? Because everybody else, and I wanted to, and I don't even know why I wanted to have, you know, those kinds of things that I have to have.
Mm-hmm.
I want to prepare my child to get out of graduate school, go to work for the firm, and realize just because the senior partners have cars with numbers and letters on the back doesn't mean I have to have cars with letters and numbers on the back. I don't need to conform to that. I've got other things to do with my life.
Now, I know, you know, you raise your children with consciousness of why am I doing this? What am I part of in the bigger picture? I'm part of a family. I'm part of God's family. I'm trying to please God, really, and just live for Him. And you put that in your child, but then they hit the certain stage and all of a sudden, everything's in question. Obviously, we know middle and high schoolers, they're trying to figure out who they are. So self is in question.
Sure. God's in question.
God's in question. Family's in question.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the biggest voices and the most important ones are then their peers
could
and their
be.
Culture.
Doesn't have to be, but it could be. And I don't want to belittle that. It's a huge voice. And in families where there's been some turmoil with the parents or there's a breakup with the parents or whatever, where the foundation has been cracked and those kids are thinking, well, the only safe place is peers because I can walk away from that peer anytime. I can disconnect anytime. They're a safer relationship. But as I want to earn my way in, I need to conform to the pattern of that world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's different. It doesn't have to be where parents no longer, and I do think some parents think, I no longer play any part or have any influence in my middle schooler's life. And that's not true.
Right. You almost want to give up. Just say, you know what?
Well, it's convenient to think.
But, and a lot of parents do, though. And
well,
then
I think
they
throw up their hands and say, well, what can you do?
Right.
Kids will be kids.
Exactly.
No. Kids will be whatever we expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we have dumbed down our approach and we've decided, I think I'm just going to buy them an iPhone and a couple of cool things and make sure they got their Wii working and then we're good.
Because I want the peace.
Yeah.
And I want them to be happy. You know, I only get them for 18 years. Let's just let them have a happy childhood and let them have everything that they need. And they'll always know that my house is the place where they got everything that they needed. And then they walk out.
And they get nothing that they needed.
Right.
Everything they got that we thought they needed is broken and not usable anymore anyway. I agree with you. I think we're in our third generation of, I don't want my children to miss what I missed.
Mm-hmm.
And there were generations that what they got is they didn't get everything they wanted. And if they wanted some extra things, they got a little job or a paper route.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying, you know what? I don't want that for my child. Yet again, another two or three generations of signing them up for everything, entertaining them to death, and continually pushing them in separate peer groups, the soccer peer group and the church peer group and the school peer group and the performance peer group and whatever, and wondering why are all these peer groups having a much bigger impact? And why is my son look so up to that idiot who's the best soccer player, who's got a foul mouth, and his mom is terrified to take him on? And that's the role model for my child.
Mm.
And so backing out and realizing, okay, we're not doing all these things. We're doing some things. I want my children to practice, not be conformed to, but practice dealing with that. And I want to download with my son regularly. I want to set my children up to win. Part of that is dealing with peer pressure.
And we have more to talk about on this topic of peer pressure. So hope you can join us for that tomorrow on the next edition of Parenting Today with Dr. Bob Barnes from Sheridan House Family Ministries. I'm your host, Ruthie J, and two websites you can remember if you want more information about Sheridan House and all the services offered there. You can go online to shfm.org. That's short for Sheridan House Family Ministries. The other website to remember where you can hear this program again, share it with friends, even sign up for the daily email blog, that's online at parentingtoday.org. Again, parentingtoday.org.